We got a lot to get to with Audrey Anderson from Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. She's our first guest this afternoon. And Audrey, it's good to chat with you.
Oh, it's good to be back. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, as always, Audrey. And there's a couple reasons I wanted to bring you on today. And one of them came from a conversation I was listening to on the Lisa Dent Show here on WGN just a couple days ago. She was interviewing a mom who was derided in 2008 for saying that she allowed her 9-year-old to ride the New York subway unattended. And it was a big thing back then, and she has continued on this movement of trying to give kids and a little bit more independence to make their own way. I think she has a nonprofit organization called Let Grow, like a play on Let Go a little bit. And it really brought us to some of our earlier conversations we've had, Audrey, about DCFS and about laws involving parenting. So I thought we'd dive in them into the laws as they are right now and kind of get a better sense for what is okay or not okay in Illinois. That work for you?
That sounds great. That's a very interesting topic.
Yeah, for sure. I know that the term helicopter parenting has gotten thrown around a lot later, so this would be kind of like the opposite of it. And I am curious from listeners, by the way, 312-981-7200, feel free to text in or call in if you have any questions. I'm curious at what age you let your kid stay home alone. And please include the year that was. I'm curious to see if we can get a range here of when it was okay to leave kids home alone. Because Audrey, this question has changed a lot over the decades, hasn't it?
It absolutely has. I know when I was younger, a long time ago, it seemed like it was different, that it was acceptable to leave kids home. You know, if a parent had to run to the grocery store, or if a kid was homesick and a parent had to go to school. But I think it just depends, obviously, on a variety of factors. And there's numerous laws out there. There's nothing definite, but there's various factors as to a court deciding whether or not a child has been left alone or whether it's appropriate. Obviously, the law says that if a child is under 6 years of age or younger and unattended, like in a car for 10 minutes, that's per se inappropriate and criminal. So obviously a child that young should not. And unattended is also defined in statutes about if a child who is 17 and under is not, a young child is not accompanied by a person 14 or older. So presumably, I guess if you're 14, that I guess in the gray area would be old enough to leave your child alone. But I think at that point you're in high school.
Yeah. At 14 seems a little late for me to leave a child unattended. In fact, growing up in the 80s and 90s, I feel like I was left unattended, smartly so, at a younger age. Okay, I want to just make sure I understand the law. So, as it is right now, if you're under 6 or 6 or under, you can't be unattended for really any time. That sort of makes sense. That seems like obvious to me.
Right, definitely. And then other factors to determine, because it's not really black and white. There's a lot of factors to determine whether a child is appropriate to be left home alone or left alone. It's the age, where the child is left, the conditions, the length of time the child's left home alone, if there's any special needs for the child, the time of day, where the parent is, like how close to the child the parent is, if the child is locked into like a room or a home or an apartment, if there's provisions for the child left there, and then, of course, the generic catch-all, any other factor.
Any other factor written into it. Okay. Do you think that law is too nebulous for parents to try and figure out, or do you think it is good to have flexibility in the law because no two kids and no two situations are the same?
Probably both. It is great that it's not black and white because it does give parents the flexibility, but then there's so much gray and discretion for law enforcement as to whether or not they should charge a parent with a crime, or DCFS, whether or not they should get involved and remove a child from a parent, or in the case a child or a parent for child abuse or neglect, for leaving the child alone, or allowing a child to go down the street, walk by themselves to a park. So it's pros and cons for both.
Yeah. Does this come up a lot in whether it's like custody battles or discussions between neighbors? I mean, is this a common reason why people would call DCFS on another parent because they disagree with the parenting styles and what age they think their kid should be left alone at?
Yes, definitely. It comes up a lot, especially through DCFS. Absolutely.
Okay.
DCFS gets called all the time because they'll see someone will see a child walking down the street or in the park by themselves, and a person calling and thinks that the child is too young. So then they get called, but then a parent will say, "Well, no, we just stepped away for a minute," or the child's in third grade or fourth grade or second grade, but they're really advanced and they don't have special needs, and we're just coming right back. So it happens all the time.
Okay, let's say I have a park, like a block or two away from my house. I'm using an example. I'm not going to name any names. And I have a 10-year-old girl and an 8-year-old boy, and they like to ride their bikes. And I give them the independence to go ride their bike to the park together, stay for 10 or 15 minutes to jump on the, ride the swings or whatever it is, and bike on back. Is that okay?
I think, unfortunately, it's very gray. I think for police officers, it may be okay, but for DCFS, I don't know necessarily if it would be okay. It depends on the circumstances, how often the child goes, how independent the children are, what the parent was doing in the interim. Those are all different factors. So each case can be a completely different situation.
Okay, well, this is a very specific example from a friend of mine, and she sat on the front porch and she didn't see them the whole way, but there was a point where at the park she couldn't see them. She sat there, she waited, she looked at her clock, and then her kids, with helmets on, came biking back at the regulated time. Are you telling me that another parent watching this could have called DCFS and DCFS could have gotten involved?
Absolutely, yes. That has absolutely happened, unfortunately, to clients that I have spoken with and represented. Correct. And that doesn't mean that DCFS is going to indicate that parent and find that that parent was neglectful or inappropriate with their child. But yes, then DCFS does get involved and has to investigate.
How old can a babysitter be? Or like, well, how young, I guess I should say, can someone be a babysitter? Is there no laws about that?
There really isn't any law about that, but I presume maybe 14. If we look at some of the other statutes and piece together that a child is not unattended if they're accompanied by a person 14 years of age or older, so presumably you can have a younger child being babysat by a 14-year-old.
Does it matter if it's siblings? Like, does that strengthen the argument? Because a sibling will take care of, maybe they will take less care of their sibling. I don't know. But I mean, that's commonly what it is, right? It's the 12 or 13-year-old watching the 8 or 9-year-old, who's then maybe watching the 4 or 5-year-old. Like, this is very common in households across America.
It is very common, but unfortunately, the statutes and DCFS codes really don't distinguish between siblings watching or like a neighbor's friend.
I feel like this needs to be written down a little. I get that it should be a little nebulous, and obviously, ultimately, prosecutors have discretion, right? And police officers use discretion, and maybe that's the best plan forward. But I almost feel like it is a little too in the air.
Right. It is very much in the air. It is very subjective, and you can have one officer or one DCFS caseworker responding to an investigation and find that it's completely fine. And then the next day, a different officer with a different caseworker finds that it's inappropriate.
Well, right. And also, it's the example of leaving kids home alone. They're in the house. They're not going anywhere else. That is a different circumstances than letting your kids ride their bicycle through the streets to a park where no a direct parent is watching them or no adult is necessarily watching them. They are very different circumstances. We're getting a lot of texts about what their people's reactions to this. 847 says, in the mid-90s, 12 years old is when I was left alone. The 815 says, response to the woman who let her son ride the train, 8 is too young, no matter where or the year, to be finding a way on a train. That is lazy, can't be bothered parenting. And I really think there's, I mean, 8 or 9 does seem really young to ride the train alone. I have to admit that. But I mean, I'll just say it. Audrey, I used to take the Metra in when I was like 11, maybe, me and a couple friends, maybe 12. My parents would give us like $20. We'd take the Metra in. We'd walk to the Red Line, take the Red Line up to Wrigley Field and watch a Cubs game and then come home that afternoon or evening the same way. And that didn't seem at all unusual to me.
Well, I think that nowadays, unfortunately, that would be unusual, and I think that that could cause problems for parents nowadays that do that.
Is it past this is, my parents can't be arrested because that was like 30 years ago, right?
Right. You're all clear. They're all safe now.
All right. I didn't want to call my mom and dad out on the air and have a DCFS call about their now 39-year-old kid telling a story about when he was a kid. Do you get this a lot? Is this a lot what people that end up calling into your office, Audrey?
It does, especially in the summer months when it's beautiful outside, or in the springtime, just as the weather is getting better. You know, parents or guardians or adults have children, they're outside doing yard work, and so you'll have a child, second grade, you know, 8, 7, 8, 9, going up and down the street riding their bicycles. Well, I mean, some cars, sometimes driving past, will see a car, a kid at the end of a street and say, I wonder where that parent is, and they look around, they don't see adults, and then they call the police. Well, unfortunately, you know, the parent did know where the child was, but that happens quite a lot.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to dismay, you know, certain neighbors who may be a little bit concerned if they see a kid wandering around. And also, kids sometimes look a different age than they are. I don't know how best to describe that. But, like, if you don't have a good gauge of what a kid's age is, you know, if you, especially if you don't have kids, you know, you might be calling on a 13-year-old thinking that they look like they're 8 years old. And so I don't want to disparage neighbors from, you know, being concerned. But when you make that call to police, that could really lend to trouble, although, again, the police have some discretion when they show up at the house, right?
Right. Police, they do have discretion. But the thing is, I guess it's embarrassing. A lot of clients have told me, you know, it's embarrassing when police officers show up to your house. And they're asking you questions, and then they go to your neighbors asking what type of parent you are and if you leave your children unattended all the time. So you don't want people to speculate why police officers are at your house or asking neighbors about it. And it's difficult.
Yeah. Are you able to, let's say someone calls you to hire you because they're being either investigated or DCFS has called them. Are you able to, as a defense attorney, able to like explain things a little bit more and make the argument that this parent was acting completely responsibly?
Yes, definitely. And a lot of times we are successful and DCFS caseworkers are reasonable because they realize an isolated incident of you being outside and your child goes down the street or something, it's just an accident. That doesn't mean that a parent is necessarily neglecting their child. It's just a one-time incident. So as long as no one's hurt, it wasn't for a long period of time, it was just not too far a distance from the home, usually caseworkers from DCFS and law enforcement are pretty reasonable.
Right.
It's when it gets to be officers responding a lot, or the officers sometimes, actually I have seen from clients and police reports, they'll actually look at the child from a distance and see how long if it will take till a parent comes up to a child or someone comes up to a child. And then after 10 minutes, the officer just calls it and goes up to the child to start questioning them.
Is it sometimes grumpy neighbors who see it like 3 days in a row and keep on calling that can actually lead to trouble for some of your clients?
Sometimes that is true. You have neighbor disputes. Sometimes, unfortunately, people live on a busy street. So you have some concerned citizen who's driving down the street.
Yeah.
But homes are going to be on busy streets. And sometimes you will just have altercations or a grumpy neighbor who would do it differently because they were raised in a different time. So that happens all the time.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm curious what you all think. Text in or call in about appropriate ages. What is the appropriate age in the scenario I laid out to let your kid ride to the bike, to the park and back? I feel like I did that at 8 or 9 years old. What do you think is the appropriate age now? Curious your thoughts. AndersonAA.com is where you can reach Audrey Anderson, attorneys and advisors, 630-877-5800. We'll have more with Audrey Anderson after this break in the news on Let's Get Legal. Audrey Anderson's with us now on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. And Audrey, no surprise, the text line is lighting up with people telling us their stories about a little bit more of the free range childhood they had. When did this shift, Audrey, illegally or just parentally? It's got to be what, Stranger Danger, the 80s and 90s?
Right, I think it did. And people thinking that obviously criminals are more mobile, you can get around easier, there's quick access to hop on and off of expressways. And I think people nowadays are just more aware of what's going on and that there are dangers out there.
There are. But like, and not to say that you need to experience danger to be a kid, but some freedom, is an important part of development. You're not a child psychologist, though, Audrey Anderson, so I'm not going to put you on the spot and tell us how to raise our kids. You're here from a legal perspective, but I just wanted to read a few texts. The 630 says, I was a kid back in the 50s. I'm the middle child of seven in the family. My mom let me take my little sister and brother from 69th and Racine to the L to Wrigley Field. I was 12. They were 7 and 8. We had a great and safe time. The 224 chimed in with, I was 12 in 1969. We rode our bicycles several miles from Glenview to the Skokie Swift, then to Wrigley Field. We watched the game. We came home. My kids rode their bikes to the neighborhood pool at 7 with a few other kids. That was in 1981. We're raising children who are too dependent all the way to adulthood. Yeah, and Audrey, I think that that group of kids mentality, I can remember the pool. We would ride our bikes to the pool, and boy, we might have been 8 or 9 years old. Audrey stayed there all day and came home. Is it now just laws are getting stiffer, or people are just a little bit more worried about, you know, DCFS, you know, knocking on their door, maybe rightfully so, but just concerned about that?
Right. I think people are just more concerned nowadays of what could potentially happen. And so it seems like a lot of laws now regulate behavior, whereas back then it didn't. And what's so interesting is back then, like when I was growing up, there weren't any cell phones. So it's not as if my parents could look on their app to see where my phone was located. It was, you know, come back when the streetlights came on, or in the summertime, come back at 6 for dinner, and you just kind of guessed when 6 o'clock was. So it is very interesting how it's changed. I think they're just trying to monitor and control people's behavior more because, unfortunately, some people, there's isolated instances of when people are not using their best discretion with regards to children. And so then laws get written because of that sometimes.
Yeah, and no doubt, like, kids biking in the street can lead to accidents. And, of course, there was a run of, and, you know, that continues to this day, unfortunately, kidnap. I mean, there's terrible things that happen in the world, and I understand the need of laws to try and prevent as much of it as you can, but it's a real fine line to figure out where that is.
That's very true. It's a very fine line, and that's a huge debate on how much we want government to intrude and dictate how to parent and raise a child.
My dad, I like the street lights go on. That's when you come home. My dad has the loudest whistle anyone's ever heard, and people will still comment on it. I don't know how he makes this sound happen using his fingers and his mouth, but we could be like at our elementary school, which was like 3/4 of a mile away, and hear that whistle. And if it went on again, you knew you were way too late and you better bike home faster.
Amazing.
Okay, so I wanted to ask a little bit more about the process that DCFS plays in this. Obviously, their role is to try and protect kids. I know a lot of great DCFS caseworkers. I know you do too. The vast majority are working overworked to try and figure out and navigate this difficult world. How does it work? Does someone have to call DCFS to lodge a complaint? They start an investigation and they just show up at your house? Walk us through a little bit of that process.
Of course. So there is a DCFS hotline that people can just Google. And so then it goes to a hotline. It's typically you just leave a voicemail and you just do a summary. You don't even have to leave your name. So I don't have to call the hotline and say, I'm Audrey Anderson. I'm calling from Wheaton or Chicago or Glenview or wherever. I can just call and say, I just saw a child driving down, or while I was driving on Route 64, I saw a child who looked to be 8 riding a bicycle standing on the corner. That's it. That's all it takes.
What?
So then the hotline, yeah, I know. It's crazy. That's how general you can be. You don't even have to leave your name.
Okay, well, let's walk through the process, because that doesn't mean that parents are getting arrested or anything. So let's walk through how it happens then.
Right, it does not. So it gets called to the main hotline. It's the same number for the entire state. Then the hotline operators, they determine where the location is, and then they forward that call, the allegation, to the local DCFS office. And then there's a rotating list of DCFS caseworkers, child protection specialists, who then get the call, and then they're required within 24 hours to go to that parent's home.
How do they find out whose home it is if it's just a random call about a kid on the street?
I know. That's how sometimes it's difficult.
Yeah.
I don't know how they would know that. They just have to. Then what they sometimes do is it takes longer than 24 hours. So reach out to local law enforcement determine if they received the call and if they were involved. And then police officers cooperate with DCFS and turn over the police reports. So through a police report, then the caseworker can figure out if it is a child and the home address for that specific child and the parents.
Okay, so if they have the address, they know where to go. Do they literally just show up and knock on the door?
They do, yes.
And what happens?
Right, so they knock on the door. It's not like they're wearing some sort of vest or shirt that says DCFS. They're just regular people, and they explain why they're there. They ask to come in. They explain that they're a child protection specialist with DCFS and that there's this allegation, and they want to speak with all the people in the home, the children alone, and then each parent separately.
And that all happens in the house?
Yes.
Where do the parents go when they talk to the kids alone? Is it like, please go wait in another room? What happens if a parent says no?
Right. I think if the parent says no, then DCFS will typically step outside and contact law enforcement to arrive at the scene to assist them.
Because they have authority to do this. Like, they have state backing to do this.
They do. Their administrative code allows them and grants them permission to go in there and speak with a child by themselves without the parent being present. So a lot of times, parents will go to a different floor of the home or just a different room of the home that the child cannot see and hear the parent.
Okay, so they talk to the kids, they talk to the parents. Could they, at that moment, take a child with them?
Yes, they can. Depending on how many times DCFS has responded to that home, how many times there's been complaints, then yes, they could just say, unfortunately, we're taking protective custody of your child because we've come here one too many times of you not being around and your child's left home alone or wandering outside, especially if it's cold and the child is outside, or if it's too hot and the child is outside. And then DCFS just will leave you, take your child, and within the next day or so, they'll call you back to tell you when you have to go to court for a hearing before a judge.
Okay, I don't want to fearmonger here because, again, we're talking about DCFS doing a lot of great work, too. You're saying under most circumstances, though, they don't just walk away with your kid if it's the first time they visited your house for something like they bike to the park, like what we're talking about.
Right, right. For the situation that we're talking about, a bike to the park, or you're sitting in the back doing yard work and your child's somewhere else or got away from you, correct. DCFS is not most likely going to take your child. They will just be talking to you and then just explain to you the caution that you need and ask you if you need services, like if you need help with someone providing respite care or a daycare provider if you ran off to go to work and you left your child home alone.
Okay. So, I mean, they're there to obviously under dire situations or if it looks like a kid is, I mean, that has to be the threshold, right? The kid is going to be in danger if they stay there any longer.
Correct.
Okay. So let's say they don't take the kid. They just are going to what? Write a report? And do they file it with the police after they talk through it? Can they just look the other way if it's clear an example of an overzealous neighbor upset by something? Let's go to the normal scenario, not the take the kid the way a scenario.
Sure. So just for a regular scenario, if it's just an angry neighbor or a confused or concerned neighbor that doesn't realize that the parent is aware of what's going on, then DCFS just talks with the parents, the children, walks to the house to make sure it's okay, then leaves the child with the parents. During the next 2 months, DCFS will reach out to police officers to get police reports to see if there's been any contact. And then eventually, DCFS will write a report and close out the case to determine whether it's indicated, meaning that there's some evidence that there was a pattern or some form of abuse and neglect that put the child in harm's way, or unfounded, meaning that there wasn't sufficient evidence.
Okay.
So if it's unfounded, then nothing happens.
Okay. Audrey, we're getting some questions on the text line, the phone line, too. Why don't we put Audrey on hold, and we'll pick up this conversation after a break. And by the way, if you want to reach Audrey Anderson, attorneys and advisors, actually, Audrey, I should ask this right now. What point should someone call you in this situation?
When a DCFS officer or investigator is at your door, you really should be reaching out to an attorney at that point, or especially if a police officer is coming to your door as well.
Can you call like before they enter? Be like, hey, I'm calling my attorney. When they get here, you can come in?
Yes, you can call. DCFS may not be too thrilled because they have the right to go inside your home. But yes, you can definitely tell DCFS that you will be reaching and speaking with your attorney while they're standing there.
Okay. And your number 630-877-5800, AndersonAA.com. We got a question from Pam. We got some on the text line. We'll get to those after this on WGN. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Well, first time I've ever messed that up. Audrey Anderson from Anderson Attorneys and Advisors joins us now. We're talking about parenting and when you might get called by DCFS and what happens next. Audrey, we got a couple questions from the 773. They want to know, hi, John, if a child is taken from the home in that situation, how quickly can an alternative family member like grandparents take responsibility for their grandchild? Audrey, let's talk through that. If a kid is taken away because they DCFS believes something very serious has happened or could happen, where does the kid go? When can they go with other family members?
That's actually a great question. All the questions actually have been great in the comments, too. So years ago, it used to be that placement wasn't with family members. It was always traditional foster home, meaning of people who you've never met. They go through a program through DCFS, and they're licensed to become foster parents where they can take in children removed from parents. So you don't know these people that your children are going to. Thankfully, a few years ago, it changed so that the focus is initially your child should be placed with a family member that's appropriate, or more recently, what they call fixed of kin. So good friends, good family friends, and aren't related to you, but they're like family. So DCFS does talk to the parents and ask initially if there is a family member or a grandparent or sibling that your children can go to. So then DCFS just has to do a quick background check on the parents or grandparents or other relatives first before placing the kids with them. So that can be done rather quickly. So that is definitely the first goal and the first placement for these kids.
Right, because that makes sense. I mean, you don't want to traumatize these kids. I have a really dumb question to follow up, though. Like, does it matter if it's on a Saturday? Like, can they not run the background check till Monday? It may not seem like a big deal, but like 2 days with strangers for a kid, that can hurt them.
But no, DCFS has the capability to be doing this 24 hours a day, 365 days a year.
Good to know. This is from the 312. This is unfortunate, I think. I'm a teacher. I reported some concerning behavior of a kid. I did it anonymously, which is, I think, what we want our teachers to do, right? They're sometimes the first line of defense with this stuff. Grandparent ended up outing me on our school's email, and they want to keep it as anonymous as possible, right? I guess there's no way to prevent it if someone thinks they know who reported it, but we should try and do our best to keep the people reporting it anonymous, because I guess the presumption should be that they're doing it earnestly and with the help of the child in mind.
That's correct. So DCFS has the rule that they will never disclose who made the allegation. Sometimes the caseworker will say it was a known person as opposed to an anonymous, so someone who didn't leave a name. But a lot of times, parents do want to know who's reporting them, and they can figure out from the situation. So if it's a specific allegation or a specific incident, they can be, this happened in the home last night. We argued, or something happened at home last night, and then the next day DCFS showed up on my house. Well, the only place my child has been at school, so it must be the teacher. So unfortunately, parents do try to guess who it is. Sometimes they're right, and unfortunately, sometimes they're wrong. But DCFS does their best to protect those who make the allegations.
Right, and I wish that someone wouldn't just post that online. The teacher was acting what they thought was in their best interest, but unfortunately, there's nothing you can do. Someone finds out, they post something online. Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? That's a free speech argument. Hey, really quickly, I want to get Pam in here on the line. Pam, we got like 45 seconds. What are your thoughts on this whole conversation?
Well, I just have to point out, I'm the grandma. My daughter and son-in-law and her family live down the block. We're in Downers. And when the younger one was in school, if he forgot his lunch, they immediately gave him a lunch. And my daughter called them because she was encouraging the kids to learn to make their own lunches. And then if they forgot them, there's that accountability. But they were denied that accountability. You know, they had, no, you can't be hungry. And my daughter called and talked and said, it's not like they're starving, but he needs to learn if he forgets his lunch.
That's an interesting one, Pam. Yeah, that's an interesting one. I get the idea of wanting the kid to learn, but I see where a school is like, I don't know, we're supposed to probably make sure they're... I understand that there's two sides to that one.
See, I'm sorry. I have to argue that point because it's almost overkill. And nobody in Downers that I know of is going hungry. And he also learned how to con and say he forgot his lunch to the school and look for a better lunch.
Now, that's fair, too. That is a byproduct. Yeah. Pam, I got to let you go. Yes. Shout out to Downers Grove.
Okey-doke.
Yeah, for sure. And there are, I mean, I know there are, the thought of hunger is a really important one. Talk to the folks at the Greater Chicago Food Depository. They'll tell you we don't know which families are going hungry or not in those sort of circumstances. But I appreciate the call, Pam. Audrey, it's been a great conversation. I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you again for having me. It was wonderful. Great comments and questions and interaction.
For sure. 630-877-5800 is how you can reach Audrey Anderson, andersonaa.com.